The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and as promised, I am back with day three of the Barry Morphew preliminary hearing. Days 1 and 2 were August 9th and 10th, and we took about a week and a half break, and now we are back with day 3 here on the 23rd. And then on the 24th, as all of you will be listening to this, is the final day, day 4. The purpose of this preliminary hearing, again, like if you followed us with the Lori Vallow Chad Daybell coverage, is to determine whether there is enough evidence for Barry Morphew to go to trial, to go on trial, for the murder of his wife, Suzanne Morphew. If you haven't, catch up on episodes 1 and 2, days 1 and 2 that I did on this. There's a lot, guys. Days 1 and 2 brought a lot of new just kind of bombshell exhibits and facts into the case that a lot of us just had no idea. And day 3 actually proved to be pretty much just as stunning. So we're going to get into that and break down the preliminary hearing, basically just line by line, more or less. And again, shout out, massive shout out to all of the journalists and reporters who have been covering this, in particular, Lauren Scharf. If you are unfamiliar with who she is, she is a reporter for Fox 21 News out of Colorado Springs, Colorado, and you can find her on Twitter at LaurenSharfTV. A lot of the information that I get is from her tweets. She was sitting in the courtroom live tweeting as the preliminary hearing was going, and she has been absolutely incredible. What I do, just for full transparency and making the outline for this, is I went through a variety of tweets by Lauren, as well as other journalists and end of day news, to basically create a comprehensive outline with as much information and the full story from the day's hearing. Again, big shout out. Follow Lauren if you haven't. She will be doing today's hearing as well for the 24th, but it's really interesting to see it as it comes in second by second. So before we get into that, let's just get our quick housekeeping out of the way. As always, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. From there, you can find us on social media. You can send us an email if you have any questions, concerns, compliments. And you can also find our Patreon. Separately, our Patreon is patreon.com/wesawthedevil. And if you are liking the show, vibing with it, and you want to financially back it and get some pretty cool stuff in return, please do so. You can do that at patreon.com/wesawthedevil. For as little as $3 a month, basically a cup of coffee, you can financially support the show, the time and effort that goes into this, the research, the editing, all of the expenses, and get some cool stuff in return. And if you are still enjoying the show and you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. That is the best way in the world that you can support your favorite podcasts. Also, while we were waiting for the new Suzanne Morphew for day 3 of the preliminary hearing, I did put out a recent episode on the Blood Countess, Elizabeth Bathory. Listen to the episode if you haven't. Fascinating, fascinating historical character. Basically, was she a victim of a patriarchal culture? and greed? Or was she really the world's worst first female serial killer? As a whole, she would be considered the worst, but is she actually the first? Or is it all just a huge misunderstanding? Listen to the episode to find out. Alrighty, so let's get into day three. So day three of testimony here, guys. As everyone knows, Barry Morphew's defense team is comprised of absolute rock stars. You have Drew Nielsen, Iris Eitan. Well, today they brought three more people in with them, plus the witnesses that they plan to interview. So it was a stacked court on the defense side. But also returning on this day was at former FBI agent Johnny Grusick. Don't forget, he was the one who has been doing this for decades. He has experience with cases where bodies are not found, behaviorist experience, investigations, interrogations. He is really a fascinating character, and he actually retook the stand on day three. And he was immediately examined by Drew Nielsen, Barry Morphew's primary attorney. And first off, they began to discuss the chipmunks. For some reason, Drew Nielsen just wanted to make it very clear that Barry wasn't saying that he shot 85 chipmunks all at once, just that he shot a total of 85 chipmunks, which, alrighty. Then it turns over to the trash runs and what Barry supposedly threw away at each stop. The first stop, the bus stop, it had no pictures or video associated with it. There was also no video for stop two. The first time that there was actually surveillance video of Barry Morphew throwing trash out of his truck is stop number three. And he told investigators, quote, "I'm a tight wad and I don't want to pay for trash pickup. I work so much where my truck becomes a trash truck." And investigators don't have any photos or videos from the men's warehouse trash run, which is extremely unfortunate because I think a lot of us believe that that was probably the most important one out of all of them. And then they discuss that the plastic tree pot that Barry Morphew allegedly threw away at the hotel back at the Holiday Inn is similar to the one that he buys at a nursery in Salida. And again, as a side note, another warning, I've done this in the previous two episodes. As I'm going through this episode, it's also going to be doing the same here. So I'm going literally as court happened in the order that it happened. And so we are going to be kind of an arcade machine today and go where the testimony took them. So then Drew Nielsen began comparing both the car and truck records against one another. The phone records show that Barry was in his truck when he made numerous phone calls on Sunday, May 10th in Broomfield. The prosecution has been trying to say that his phone could still be synced to his truck when he isn't in the truck, like say he was actually inside his hotel room and the truck was parked nearby. And then the conversation turns to a topic that is actually going to take a good deal of time throughout the entire day today with all of testimony, the tranquilizer dart. The dart cap was found in the dryer later on May 19th, and investigators had absolutely no idea how it got there, how long it was in there, nothing. And it's really actually important that Drew Nielsen is making this distinction. There were two DNA profiles on this cap, and Barry Morphew's DNA was not one of them. Now, law enforcement found empty tranquilizer darts, but no chemicals or vials of the chemicals when they searched the home. Barry told investigators at the time, quote, "I don't recall having any left." Well, Drew Nielsen also said that the dart gun was not operational and did not work. The court then did a full demonstration on how a dart doesn't come with fluids or chemicals in them. You have to have the dart gun, you have to buy the chemicals and all of it separately, and then assemble it yourself. So Nielsen then also shows how someone has to inject it into the dart, like the chemicals into the dart itself. The tranquilizer dart that everyone refers to that was found in the dryer, it was actually a tranquilizer needle sheath, not so much a cap, but a sheath for the needle from the dart gun. Barry Morphew told investigators when they found it and asked him, quote, "I don't know how that got there. It had nothing to do with me." Now, obviously, the implication of this is that he's pretty much saying, well, that's Suzanne's territory. I had nothing to do with that. It also came out that the day of that important text, you know, the one where Suzanne Morphew finally said, "I'm done," the one that came on May 6th, just a couple days before her disappearance, she was actually at the neighbor Jean Ritter's house having coffee. And she was actually there from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And she sent that text message while she was there. Maybe Jean gave her the courage to send that text message, but it's very, very odd that she's sitting in someone's home, supposedly having coffee, and then sends that text message to Barry. And then the defense went over a series of text messages, logistical questions with former agent Grusick. Nothing terribly noteworthy here for this piece. But the next piece I found of interest is they brought up Barry's interview. On May 10th, now we're talking Mother's Day, they asked Barry which direction he went when he turned off of his street. Did he turn left? Did he turn right? If he had turned right, he would have been heading towards Salida and Broomfield, where he supposedly had business. But if he had turned left, he would have been going in the direction of where Suzanne's helmet was eventually found. He told investigators that he turned left. Why? He told them that he saw a herd of elk and wanted to see where they would be shedding their antlers. And then remember the incoming and outgoing calls at 12.02 a.m. and 12.17 a.m. early in the morning on Mother's Day on Suzanne Morphew's phone? This is where most people believe that Barry had already either subdued and or murdered her. It was 12.02, 12.17 a.m. She had an incoming and then an outgoing call on her phone. Agent Grusick said that according to Verizon, there were no calls or text messages during this time.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
The last registered call from Suzanne's phone was on May 9th in the afternoon. And if we have any tech people out there, anyone who specializes in communications, phone systems, anything like that, I would be really interested in hearing why on days one and two, these two phone calls were considered very important as far as why both incoming and outgoing calls were made that early in the morning. And then suddenly now they can't actually be considered registered calls. So I would love to speak with someone who specializes in communications or networks to discuss why this has now changed. Agent Grusick then talked about when Barry Morphew could have had time to dispose of Suzanne's body. Again, speculation for most people is May 9th going on into May 10th. And he said, based on his own thoughts and his timeline that he can kind of create, he said that Barry had about 6 hours to dispose of a body, which means that it could have entailed at least a 3-hour round trip between potentially getting rid of her body, possibly dismembering, or going, you know, 3-hour round trip each way based on the data from the truck and his phone records. The conversation then went back to chipmunks and the dart gun and Barry's explanation of how frequently he would shoot them. And he also admitted to shooting deer from his deck or patio with that dart gun. He told investigators that he last used his tranquilizer gun to shoot a deer in late April of 2020 to get their antlers. He said, quote, "I'm telling you right now, to get horns. They go to sleep, I remove their horns. They go off with no horns on their head." And a lot of time was spent on the chipmunks piece of this. They kept talking about the chipmunks and what kind of gun he used and where he would find them and so on and so forth. Apparently a lot of chipmunk talk. But let's not also just, you know, kind of go over the fact that he's talking about illegally taking antlers and horns, as he called them, from deer. And then we have something super interesting, which is really actually unfortunate. From May 5th through May 9th of 2020, the FBI itself said that they could not get everything off of Barry Morphew's phone that he had deleted. And apparently, he actually deleted a lot, which is not what was made public in the testimony from a week and a half ago. The prosecution asked Agent Grusick directly, "Is it possible that Barry could have been tracking Suzanne?" And Agent Grusick replied, "Yes." But what is known about May 8th, the day before Suzanne's final known whereabouts, is that Barry allegedly brought up moving to Arizona. And Agent Grusick said that this was the first time this was ever mentioned to Suzanne and thought it was strange. She thought it was strange. And Suzanne was actually looking at homes for sale in Salida, Colorado, according to the text messages. Perhaps she didn't want to go or was planning on the divorce actually coming into fruition and wanted to stay where she was at. So the next witness was Derek Graham with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. And he's been with the Bureau for 2 years. Before that, he worked with the Colorado Springs Police Department for 34 years. Agent Graham immediately began to talk about Suzanne's belongings, like the physical evidence, things like that, starting with a bike helmet. The state began to show photos of where it was found. And Agent Graham only saw photos, not the actual helmet, but he said that there was no indication of a crash based on all of the photos that were taken of it. Then they moved to Suzanne's 2015 Range Rover that was still in the garage and what was found inside of it. And remember, empty hot tub bottles were found on the floorboard next to her Camelback, and then her purse was still inside the vehicle. Again, the Camelback implies that Suzanne was not planning on going on a bike ride or that she didn't go on one at all. For those of you who are not aware, that is your ability to drink water. It allows you to take fluids with you as you're doing an activity. And Suzanne always took her Camelback. It was in her car. And a show of hands from all of you, ladies out there especially, how many of you leave your purse in your car unlocked, even if you live in a remote area? And how many of you would leave your purse, cash, cards, ID, driver's license back home in the car in the garage if you decided to run away to a foreign country with your secret lover? I mean, I'm just saying, because that makes no sense whatsoever. But that is, in fact, what it seems like, at least, the defense is trying to do in this case. They're trying to basically say that Suzanne just hightailed it out of there. So going through more stuff that was found in and around the house, they showed a photo of Mallory Morphew's bedroom. Her pillows and comforter were on the ground around the bed, and then the sheets were found downstairs. It also showed the spy pen, the infamous spy pen, and it was found in the master bedroom closet. First of all, the closet had all female clothing, so it was most likely Suzanne's, and it was found inside of a box of bras. And then a picture of the pen was also shown to Agent Graham. So the prosecution asks Agent Graham about the darts. We're back on the darts again. Like I said, a lot of conversation today about the dart and the dart gun. And Agent Graham said that there was one box of syringes inside the safe in the garage, as well as several darts. So then they showed a photo of the garage with the safe being open. And Barry Morphew's attorney, Iris Ayton, then gets the chance to cross-examine Agent Graham. And attorney Ayton asks Agent Graham about the bike helmet DNA. Barry Morphew's DNA was excluded from the bike helmet. Again, Barry Morphew's DNA was not on the bike helmet. And investigators did tire castings on both of the Morphew Range Rovers and truck, and there was no match to the area where the helmet was found. Which is really interesting because, again, speculation, right? For those who believe that Barry is guilty of this crime, they believe, I mean, hell, guys, based on the FBI cast team and Barry's phone, too. Don't forget his phone and car pinged near where the helmet was found and the bike was found. So it would make sense, right, that he carried somehow this helmet. But Barry's DNA has not been on anything so far, at least to our knowledge that they have released in court. So far, Barry's DNA has not actually made any appearance on any evidence whatsoever. Agent Graham was then asked about Barry's trip to Salida Stove and Spa, because he actually spoke directly with the owners. He said that the owners, in his interview with them, told him that Barry had been in the store asking about getting his hot tub fixed on May 9th between 4 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. He also did not buy anything while there, so he talked about getting it fixed and then did nothing. Don't forget, Suzanne Morphew asked him to bring stuff home for the hot tub. And then the conversation turned to Mallory Morphew's bed sheets that were found in the dryer. Suzanne actually had a to-do list on the kitchen counter, and one of the items said Mal sheets. So it seems like this could actually potentially be an irrelevant piece. A lot of people have made kind of a big deal about Mallory's sheets being off of her bed or, you know, being in the dryer. But the thing about it is that Mallory and her sister, remember, the two Morphew daughters, were actually going on a road trip together. So it would potentially make sense if Suzanne just did their laundry and cleaned their bed while they were gone, right? The sheets were taken from the dryer between May 11th and May 15th, and then it wasn't until May 19th when the investigators found that syringe for the dart. And then from here in the conversation, they went back to the state. And here's something that I'm thankful for. So far, the tactic the defense has been using has frustrated almost everyone. And what they do is a classic tactic of running down the clock. They will ask the most trivial questions and the most relevant bullshit and ask their witnesses and just talk and talk and talk. And what that's doing is that that's actually keeping the prosecution from having more time, for having more time to point out evidence or ask questions of witnesses. And the judge today finally reminded Attorney Ayton to keep the cross-examination short because the state only has so much time with witnesses as well. But I was glad to see that because it's been frustrating for a lot of people, and a lot of people have noticed it as well, that the defense just keeps just droning on and on and on about things that really don't matter at the end of the day, even in the grander picture, even for Barry, it doesn't even matter. So as I mentioned, Barry didn't buy anything from Salida Stove and Spa. Inside the dryer, though, investigators also found khaki-colored shorts that Barry had been wearing on May 9th, according to surveillance photos. So the shorts that Barry was wearing in the surveillance photos, I would say that it's not quite irrational to believe that Barry might have just thrown in his shorts, thrown them into the wash, and he mixed them in with the sheets and then put them over into the dryer. So don't forget, the dart cap was also found in the dryer. And I would say that it's not exactly irrational to believe that Barry might have done whatever he did on May 9th, came home, put his shorts and everything into the wash, and then just thrown everything over into the dryer. Maybe he even threw his shorts on top of the sheets that Suzanne had actually already put in there and then transferred everything over to the dryer. Perhaps he had placed that dart cap after he used it to tranquilize Suzanne, and then it came out in the as it was going through the dryer on the spin. That's actually most likely. And, you know, I know a lot of people are like, clearly this shows that he did it. Suzanne would never mix and match items in a clothes dryer like that. And to that, I have to say, guys, I'm guilty as charged. My clothes washer here at home is a freaking free-for-all. I mean, the only thing I really try not to mix up is my clothes with my sheets. And only then it's because I'm too freaking lazy to, like, dig my clothes out of those little demonic pockets it creates when it goes through that cycle. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you put in sheets with t-shirts, shorts, anything else, and it actually starts wrapping your sheet around your clothes, and then it's hell to get it out. So I'm just saying it's not necessarily indicative of Barry doing it himself, although it would potentially make sense. After the laundry situation, the court then took a break. And then coming back from break, we had a new witness, Chaffee County Sheriff's Office Undersheriff Andy Rorick. And he's been the undersheriff for 3 years and a police officer for 23 years.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
He also worked as an animal control officer for 4 of those years. So I think we can all see where this conversation is going yet again. Back to the darts. And yes, they are, but that'll be here in a moment. So Undersheriff Rorick was called while he was off duty around 8:14 p.m. on May 10th about Suzanne Morphew missing. He got on the scene at around 8:52 p.m. Barry had just been there for 5 minutes before Undersheriff Rorick got there himself. So he came up and Barry had just gotten there. Undersheriff Rorick took a look over the photos of Barry Morphew's truck. He described the cab as dirty, musty, clutter, with some clothes and a bag that he had taken to Broomfield. They then show pictures of Suzanne's Range Rover, which they'd already discussed, including the contents, the camelback, as well as they emptied her purse itself. And this purse included her medical card, driver's license, credit cards, and cash. And he is saying that she would have needed an ID to get anywhere in the country or out of the country, right? Like if she, say, was leaving for Ecuador. He also said that Suzanne would have needed her medical card to continue her scheduled cancer treatment on May 10th. And then in probably the most shocking news, like this actually hit me like a ton of bricks personally. Under Sheriff Rorick said that the door frame of the master bedroom looked like there had been forced entry from outside of the room. There was also a .22 caliber unspent shell found on Suzanne Morphew's side of the bed. So then Under Sheriff Rorick talks about things in the search like for at the home, right? Like things that they were looking for or found. Investigators were told to find three books that Suzanne Morphew would have had in the home. This includes a Bible, because don't forget that the family was very religious. Also an Alcoholics Anonymous book, because Suzanne's father was a severe alcoholic and she frequently struggled with it. And also her personal journal. Now, her personal journal has never been found. However, in the fireplace, investigators described finding pieces of material that could have been a journal, and it was burned, recently burned. There was also an untouched piece of firewood beside the fireplace. Now, keep in mind, guys, that could have been is not good enough. For all intents and purposes, they just found burnt papers in the fireplace. But they did ask Under Sheriff Rorick if potentially that could have been a journal, and he was like, well, I guess so. But no one knows. And then they talk about Barry at the home. So surveillance video of Barry is then played, showing from 9:37 p.m. on May 10th for the next 3 minutes. It shows when he was allowed to go inside of the home to identify some of Suzanne's clothing. Again, he was inside the home for 3 minutes, and he ID'd a wadded up pair of riding shorts that were on the floor. And then prosecutors go back to hunting, specifically with the damn darts. Specifically, in this case, when elks shed their antlers. Because don't forget, Barry said that he turned left outside of his driveway, going in the opposite direction of where he needed to go in Broomfield and Salida, because he saw elk, a bull elk, and he wanted to see where they would shed their antlers. So Under Sheriff Rorick said that he was also a lifelong hunter. He worked for animal control, and he knows about these things. And he said that typically elk shed their antlers before March and that bulls and cows aren't usually together by May. So again, potentially showing that Barry lied, giving him an alibi of why he went in the wrong direction towards the scene where Suzanne Morphew's stuff was found. And Under Sheriff Rorick has more on hunting. He talks about tranquilizer darts and guns. Why? Because he used them for 4 years during his time as an animal control officer. And this is also the second time where they've explained the process of using a dart gun. He explained how to use them. He explained the entire process behind putting the solution in the dart, and then how to put the dart inside of the gun. And as we now all know, based on the previous 2 days of testimony, the effects of a dart gun, they're not immediate. That's something that Hollywood has actually gotten terribly, terribly, terribly wrong. Under Sheriff Rorick said that more times than not, he would actually have to chase after a dog after he shot it with a tranquilizer dart. Like when he would get vicious dog calls or aggressive dog calls, he would have to tranquilize it. And when he would tranquilize them, he said that sometimes the dogs would be found in people's yards hours later, and then they would call him. He would also catch cats that way. And he said that deer, if Barry was claiming that he was shooting deer with a tranquilizer, they absolutely would have run off anyway, like gotten way away. And not only that, but they didn't find any animal product in the home, like antlers, right? Antlers that had been cut off. There were antlers in the home as decor, but not cut off antlers, essentially pointing out more potential lies from Barry. And this is where it really started to get, okay, you know how when you have a missing wife or missing mother and the husband is always the suspect, there's like a checklist, right? A, is he having an affair? B, how genuine does he seem in his care and concern and search for her? Number three, does he have any injuries? Like, could there have been a struggle? Well, now we have another check mark in this list because Barry did, in fact, have injuries. Pictures of Barry were shown, pictures of him with arm and hand injuries, and Under Sheriff Rorick testified that on Barry's upper left arm, it looked like there are fingernail injuries, like someone was scratching him. There were three abrasions or cuts scabbing over. Outside of his hands were injuries in various stages of healing. So that's also huge, huge, huge news. And then they showed pictures of Suzanne Morphew's bike. Under Sheriff Rorick talks about interviewing Scott Banks. Scott Banks was a bike mechanic, and he put new tires on Suzanne Morphew's bike on May 7, 2020, just 2 days before she was last seen or heard from again. And he looked at the pictures of her bike and the state of, you know, how it was found. The handlebars were twisted 180 degrees. Mr. Banks explained to investigators that this is called ghost riding and that it's seen with kids when they push a bike and the tires want to turn. If her bike had been wrecked, the handlebars and bike seat would not have been centered at all. Suzanne's were. Again, prosecution is trying to show that this was likely staged. And then we have a defense attorney, Iris Ayton. It was her turn to cross-examine Under Sheriff Rorick. And she asked if Barry Morphew followed the deputy's task when he entered the home. Was he in a good mood? Did he follow all directions? And she reminded the court that when Barry was first contacted by the deputies, that he was emotional and distraught, basically trying to give a reason to why he acted the way he did, why he later said, I don't remember, why he got things incorrect. And something else that's interesting, too, is Suzanne Morphew on May 6th, 3 days before, actually made a trip to Walmart. They have surveillance video of this. She went there to pick up a prescription at the pharmacy, and she picked up a little white bag. However, they didn't find that medication in their home or the white bag. It was completely missing as a whole. They have not found that medication or the bag or receipt for that transaction. The conversation then turned to that 2:03 p.m. text message that Suzanne sent Jeff Libler of her sunbathing on May 9th, where she's laying on her front on a towel sunbathing and said, you know, basically, thank God I'm alone, he's left. Well, the bikini from that photo was found in the master closet. There was no blood on the bikini or tears, but the bikini wasn't actually collected as evidence. In the photo of Suzanne sunbathing, you can only see a very, very small portion of the bikini. So law enforcement had no way of knowing if it had been previously torn or, you know, anything like that. So it just wasn't included in the evidence. At this point, the preliminary hearing was put on pause and everyone went to lunch. Now, returning from lunch, they immediately began to discuss the marks on Barry Morphew, like the injuries on his hands and arms. Defense attorney Iris Ayton wanted to know the measurements of these injuries, which seems like fairly normal procedure. Please give us the measurements of these injuries. And Under Sheriff Rorick didn't know because he said they didn't measure the markings. And side note entirely, this actually makes me pretty nervous. I have a lot of questions already, just from, you know, the previous 2 days of this prelim on why law enforcement didn't do certain things. You know, we have now the bikini and also the injuries on Barry. Why didn't they do standard procedure protocols with these things? I do not understand. Attorney Ayton then makes the comment that when people disappear, they don't always use their ID, especially when they don't want to be found. So again, she's immediately hammering down on the fact that Suzanne Morphew just up and left, that she was so disgusted and having this salacious affair that she just decided to skip town.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But another interesting piece of evidence, you know, back on the clothing that they then immediately go back to. And guys, I know I told you we're a ping pong ball. We're like a ping pong ball or arcade ball. And we are today. So just going through it as it happened. But then they mention another piece of evidence, which is related back to that sunbathing picture that Suzanne sent Jeff. In that photo, she was laying on a brown towel. Now, that towel has not been found. So again, for perspective here, the bikini that she was wearing in that picture was in the master closet. It was back in the closet. However, the brown towel that she was laying on outside on that chair has not been found. It was not actually returned to the home or the closet or the laundry room. It is gone. And bless Under Sheriff Rorick, because he saw through it apparently kind of like pretty much how everyone else did. He, again, got to the scene 5 minutes after Barry Morphew did. And he said that when Barry Morphew came up to the scene, that he already had crocodile tears going. He said, quote, he had crocodile tears, like fake tears at the very beginning. All right. So at this point, we have a new witness. We have CBI agent Kevin Kobach. Kevin was a field agent in Pueblo for 7 years. And then he also, most notably, worked on the Chris Watts case. District Attorney Linda Stanley began to ask him questions about Barry Morphew's employee, Morgan Gentile. Alrighty, so side note for those of you who may not be aware, Morgan Gentile was another contractor that Barry Morphew had hired. Barry hired her along with Jeff Puckett to work on the Broomfield job. Remember Jeff Puckett, the one who entered the hotel room in Broomfield, smelled like chlorine, said, damn, I know, you know, I talked about him in the previous episode. Well, there was actually another employee with him there that day, Morgan Gentile. And in an interview 4 months after Suzanne disappeared, Gentile actually did a very big interview with Fox 21 News. She said, quote, Barry had worked on the beach site Friday evening. Saturday, he had asked me to clean it up and rake it out because we were going to bring it out to level. So it would be a beach sand and not muck. He was acting really weird about the area. I was like, Barry, what's up? He seemed stressed. He definitely seemed weird on Saturday. And even though she was scheduled to work the job for most of that Saturday, Barry dismissed her early at 11 a.m. She said, quote, he said that he had to go make the wife happy, do some hiking or biking. And I find out, like, later that day that he was in town all day. So Gentile and Puckett stayed at the Holiday Inn Express waiting on word from Barry. Barry got them two different rooms. The first room for Puckett was Barry's old room. And then the second room he got specifically for Morgan. And remember, you know, his room was gross, smelled of chlorine. Morgan spoke to that. Jeff Puckett spoke to that. Well, he didn't actually end up calling them on Sunday, the day that they were supposed to work the job. He ended up calling them Monday morning at 8 a.m. and told them that Suzanne was missing and that a cougar or mountain lion had gotten her. So Morgan said that she and Puckett packed up and then drove back to Salida, where the investigation into Suzanne's disappearance at that point was totally underway. And she claims that back in Salida, she was approached by two men who were both linked to Barry Morphew, who told her, we would give you your paycheck, but we don't want it to look like hush money. You have rights, but you don't have to give the CBI your phone. But still, Morgan Gentile reports that she did actually cooperate with most of what investigators asked of her, up to and including 5 interviews. Now, she did turn over her phone and her phone records, but she declined a polygraph, which I find that weird as hell anyway. I mean, like, if I wasn't involved in anything 100%, like, I would be like, sure, give me all the polygraphs in the world. I'll take it here. But, like, I digress, right? Regardless, she's not connected to this case at all, supposedly. So she did all of that, and then she says that she heard from Barry Morphew again a couple days later through text. And in her interview with Fox 21, she said the following, quote, he fired me because I gave up my phone. I wasn't staying quiet, and I was complying with the CBI. I feel like if he was innocent, he would have talked to me. I worked with him every day for a very long time. And Barry actually ended up replying to Morgan Gentile's interviews and the news, you know, all of this like fanfare surrounding her. He says, in typical Barry Morphew fashion, quote, she's a meth head. She's mad at me because I fired her and don't let her work for me anymore. She's mad. So they're not going to say anything good about me. But back to the hearing. Morgan also confirmed what Jeff Puckett had told investigators about, you know, when they opened the door, the smell of bleach was overpowering and knocked you down. She then went through the happenings of the job in Broomfield and talked about how she feared being called Barry's mistress. Investigators investigated and determined that there was no affair. She claimed that Barry had very little emotion, but seemed to actually respect her. And she said that in the jobs of landscaping and you know, being a contractor, most men didn't respect her. And that it was very surprising that Barry actually did. But it's actually very sad. Morgan, immediately when this case happened, everyone pointed to her as Barry's mistress, that she had to be the other woman. And this apparently was so hard on her that she lost her home, lost, you know, she can't get employed, she can't get another job, and literally had to flee the state because her children and everyone around her was being bullied. So she actually had to leave the state entirely and get away from it because everyone, like, I guess armchair sleuths or whoever, got her name and then just started stalking her. Which can we not, guys? But yeah, so that was that with Morgan Gentile. Agent Kobach then confirmed that they have the surveillance video from the Holiday Inn. But again, guys, he was unaware as to whether the room was ever swabbed for Suzanne's DNA. And here's the thing. Sometimes with questions like these, that's all they say. I'm unsure as to whether it was swabbed for DNA. But was it? Like, can someone please confirm or deny if any of these areas were actually swabbed for Suzanne's DNA? Because don't forget, he brought his tools into the Holiday Inn. Like, his tools were there. Tools that could have been used to dismember or more or less, you know, dispose of Suzanne's body. He could have cleaned them. You know, why was there the smell of bleach? Like, why was the room not swabbed for her DNA? And if it was, please confirm. After him, former FBI agent Johnny Grusig was then called back to the stand, which this poor guy, he's been going on 3 full days of testimony, basically with him pretty much being 90% at the helm. He talked about the initial interview with Barry regarding May 10th. And Barry said, quote, "We had steak and sex on May 9th, best night, and there were no chemicals in Suzanne, so we had a good night." And Agent Grusig also noted that Barry used the past tense. "I just wish you knew her, how amazing she was." He told investigators that she was last seen wearing white shorts and a string-type shirt. And he also claimed, again, that Suzanne was abusing drugs and alcohol. Remember the picture message that Suzanne sent Jeff Libler, the one of her sunbathing? When he saw that picture, Barry Morphew said that it looked like she was drunk. And so his new thing is that she was abusing drugs and alcohol. By all accounts, she wasn't. But according to Barry, she was. According to Barry, when she went missing, it could have been CBD Tim down the road that apparently Suzanne was buying drugs from. I assume CBD. I have no idea. But, you know, Barry said that he could have murdered her too. It's just constantly painting Suzanne in a poor light. Now, when asked about the last image that he held of Suzanne, like, what's the last thing that you remember seeing of her? Barry couldn't remember in his interview with Agent Grusig. He didn't answer. He couldn't answer on 3 separate attempts. He couldn't even give an answer to this. Grusig then asked, "Did you see a lump in the covers? Like, did you see anything?" And Barry answered, quote, "Probably just the lump there. Just saw her breathing." And Agent Grusig said that Barry Morphew initially thought that it was a mountain lion or cougar that Suzanne Morphew was taken by. Then it was a man named CBD Tim who, you know, Suzanne bought drugs from the street. And in recalling what he did while he was in Broomfield, Barry couldn't remember any of the stops outside of just going to the job site and Holiday Inn. There's no mention of Men's Warehouse, McDonald's, all the trash stops, you know, RTD bus stop, nothing, none of that. Just Holiday Inn and job site. Conveniently, everything else was left out. And in terms of the affair with Jeff Libler, investigators asked Barry if he was aware of it, if he'd known, and he said that he wasn't. He also said, quote, "He doesn't understand why God would take away my wife. Maybe in God's eye, this is the way of him resolving something." Agent Grusig then said that Barry addressed his phone going in and out on airplane mode, saying that if he did it, it must have been done by accident. And I think all of us here can safely say that that is almost impossible, that your phone can go in and out of airplane mode very specific times. And, you know, even don't forget, Suzanne had told Sheila, her friend, that Barry would put his phone purposefully on airplane mode when he didn't want to be tracked or, you know, for her to know where he was. Agent Grusig then said that during all of Barry Morphew's interviews with investigators, he said, "I don't recall," more than 95 times. And at times, he said, "I don't recall," to very simple questions that he should have easily been able to answer. So then they went back to the dart gun. Agent Grusig was asked about the dart gun, and again, he confirmed that Barry said that it hadn't been fired since April of 2020, and also that if a person, a human being, would be ejected by BAM, the serum for tranquilizer darts, that the human would be in complete sedation within 2 to 3 minutes. The subject, the human, would likely run, become wobbly and unstable, and then doze off. And this is according to a parks and wildlife expert that Agent Grusig interviewed. And also according to Agent Grusig, Barry said that all he had left in his life was hunting. He said that he'd hunted since he was 7 years old and, quote, "If I have to live this life without her, at least I can hunt." He made no mention of his two daughters whatsoever. However, he did mention several times during the investigation that, quote, "This is in God's hand. He allowed this whole thing to happen." In tying up the final piece from testimony from this preliminary hearing today was the question of divorce. Basically, how religious they are, how they didn't believe in divorces. Agent Grusig would ask Barry, you know, "Well, what did you say? Did you ever discuss it?" And Barry acknowledged that Suzanne did, in fact, bring it up, but said that he just refused to talk about it because it was never going to be an option. And then it wasn't. It definitely clearly was not an option. But this is day 3, guys. What are you thinking? Honestly, I'm not feeling too confident here as far as evidence that they have on Barry. I have a lot of speculation. I have a lot of thoughts. But the FBI CAST team, between his truck records, the phone records, and the GPS, you know, on his phone and everything, obviously, he lied nonstop to investigators about where he was going. His location was pinged to the bike spot where her bike was found, potentially also to the helmets. Then we have the hotel room, the chlorine, the bleach, FBI CAST team showing that his phone was pinging like a wild man all around his house, running. Former FBI agent Johnny Grusig saying that he believes that Barry Morphew chased after Suzanne that day. And then we have the door frame that was almost like kicked in, like, it, you know, forced to get it open. And then the unspent shell casing on her side of the bed. We have the dart cap in the dryer. It seems to me like there's just so much circumstantial evidence in this. And remember, I believe it was in episode 1 where I discussed circumstantial evidence. I found a statistic that said like 80% of cases, do not quote me on that, it's some heinously high number. The vast majority of cases are in fact committed on circumstantial evidence. So that doesn't mean that he necessarily is going to get off because they don't have her blood or her body or a murder weapon, but it does make it a little bit more difficult. You know, in my mind, looking at just what we've known and just what we've discovered from the first 3 days of the preliminary hearing, to me, that's more than enough evidence to say that he did it and put him away. But unfortunately, I think potentially to some missteps by investigators, to law enforcement, and then also Barry himself. Guys, there's a reason why that spy pen picked up Barry listening to a true crime podcast about a woman going missing while riding her bike, and that it was a complete frame job and her husband ended up killing her. There's a reason why he listened to that true crime podcast, and then lo and behold, the same thing happened to Suzanne. I truly believe that in my core. And if this was as premeditated as it potentially could have been, he may very well have been very, 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 very careful, more careful than a lot of other people that we've seen make idiotic mistakes, like Chad Daybell looking at you. You know, the first 2 days, I was feeling pretty good about this. And then after today's evidence, it's like, wow, they really don't have anything that puts Barry, especially say DNA-wise, at any of this. You know, we have the sex offender on her car. I mean, it's a lot. And I'm really curious. We have one more day of the preliminary hearing, guys. I'll be bringing you the episode on Wednesday for the 4th and final preliminary hearing day. Something else that's really fascinating, guys, too, that you don't see it so blatantly, is that Barry Morphew's attorneys are incredible. They specialize in cases where there's a mountain of circumstantial evidence and they get a lot of their clients off. Like, they are very, very, very good at what they do. We're not talking about Mark Means here, you know? So something that they have done, and it's something that happens frequently in similar cases to this, like Scott Peterson, so on and so forth, is that they hire PR firms to change the public opinion, change the tide of public opinion. And this is on a huge display in the Barry Morphew case. If you go to Twitter, Reddit, any sort of board talking about this case, you'll find people, and normally they are brand new accounts, they have zero followers, and they only follow people who are invested or into this case. Sometimes they may have a handful of followers. However, those are frequently paid PR people, and they speak very highly of Barry. Even after, you know, it came out, he held a gun to her head. He threatened to kill himself. He's pinged here. You can go down literally a checklist of evidence, and they'll still say that he's innocent. They did the same thing with Scott Peterson. And it's not uncommon for defense attorneys in cases like these to hire PR companies to basically help with this. I got into one pretty badly earlier today on Twitter and did not go so hot. But it's just, that's what they are. And if you look, you'll see them. And I find that so fascinating on cases like these, that they're so blatantly obvious. And it's not every day that you run into them. But if you are following this case on any social media channel, be on the lookout for a lot of people who are voicing their support for Barry. And you'll actually see that most likely they are a paid person. And we will see where it stands. But that is it for this episode. Don't forget, our website is wesawthedevil.com. Our social media, you can find us everywhere at We Saw the Devil, and our Patreon. If you want to follow us on our Patreon, for as little as a cup of coffee each month, you can do so at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And please, if you have it in your heart, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps more than you know, but with the administrative, you know, side, marketing side, and all of that. And it's the best way to show a podcast that you love them. And do that for all that you listen to, not just us, guys. If you really like a podcast, go take the time, the 10 seconds, and leave them a 5-star review. I'll be seeing you on Wednesday with day 4. And then there is a non-Morphew episode coming at the end of the week. Until next crime.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.